This is Lawrence Spivak, inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, now celebrating its 23rd year on television and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News. Meet the Press is brought to you by Allstate Insurance Companies. For insurance to protect your car, your home, your life, health, and business too, talk to the Good Hands people.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the director of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, Johnny Ingersoll. Mr. Ingersoll was appointed under President Johnson in August 1968 and was reappointed under President Nixon. He served on the police force of Oakland, California, and as chief of police in Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll have the first questions now from Carl Stern of NBC News.
Mr. Ingersoll, you said recently that the drug problem has exploded into frightening proportions. Does that mean a million drug addicts or 10 million? Does it include casual users? Are we talking about middle-aged people as well as young people? What is the dimension of this frightening problem?
I think the major portion of the problem is that it is afflicting so many people, but particularly it's focusing on the younger members of our population to a frightening degree. In terms of numbers, we're talking of hundreds of thousands of addicts, millions of experimenters.
Do you use undercover agents or paid informers on college campuses?
My organization doesn't, no.
It does not. The New York State Addiction Control Agency estimated recently that addicts in New York City alone steal about $10 million a day worth of goods and money to support their habits. That's about $500 a year for each man, woman, and child. That would suggest that the extent of street crime that is attributable to narcotics is much higher than we have estimated. What is the extent?
Well, we really don't have a good handle on that because our studies haven't been definitive. The commissioner of the New York Police Department estimates that over 50% of street crime is due to addicts. In Washington, D.C., a study that was done of a few indicated that some 70% of people arrested for armed robbery in Washington were drug users. Something in the neighborhood of 35% during this study of drug users were involved in some kind of violent crime, and 50% of those were involved in robbery. So I think that in the neighborhood of half of the street crime is due to that.
Well, given the problem then, might it not be wiser to supply narcotics freely, to let the kids live in their own private hell if need be, but at least leave us alone?
No, I can't accept that as a solution. I don't think that it's a positive, constructive solution.
Mr. Ingersoll, one of the most interesting developments in your agency, as I recall, was the opening of an office in Saigon. Is it still open, and what is the number of Vietnam veterans returning that are now addicted to narcotics?
Well, the major problem in Vietnam at this time is the use of marijuana. There is relatively little use of narcotics, although there's some evidence to indicate that that, too, is increasing. There are a sizable number of Vietnam veterans who have used or have been exposed to marijuana in Vietnam. I think the Defense Department estimates that in the neighborhood of 30 or 40% of those there are so exposed.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back with Meet the Press and more questions for our guest, the director of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. But first, this message.
Hurricane Celia blew into Corpus Christi, Texas on August 3rd. Her stay was short, but far from sweet. 160-mile-an-hour winds leveled buildings, devastated autos, tore into the homes of thousands. Allstate responded quickly. Special disaster teams, claims adjusters from all over the country rushed to the scene.
This is Mr. James Walnicek of Corpus Christi, Texas.
I guess it lasted about 4 hours, but it felt like it lasted 2 or 3 days. Well, this was Tuesday morning. Thursday, I had taken my wife to work, and when I got back, there was an adjuster on my roof checking the damage.
I turned in my claim about noon one day, and they said an adjuster would be out and appraise my house, look at my damage. And by 9 o'clock the next morning, he was on the job.
But the next day, we heard on the radio, on the transistor radio, because we have no lights, no power, It said that if you come on down to Allstate, they had plenty of claims adjusters. And, well, we really were surprised that it was as quick as it was. We had to wait about 30 minutes, and there were adjusters everywhere, and he looked at our car and gave us a check.
The adjuster came by and went over everything with me and settled everything. He handed me a check right there, and to me, that is about the fastest claim service there is.
Mr. J.J. Noe is an Allstate policyholder with coverage on both his house and his car.
And the next day, he was back with an estimate of the cost and the payment.
Now, what about your car?
Well, the day I went on Tuesday to report the damage to the car, I was given a work order for immediate repair in 48 hours. You can't beat that.
I should say not. Thank you, Mr. Noe.
Yes, you're welcome.
When trouble strikes, you're in good hands with Allstate.
Now back to Meet the Press, an unrehearsed press conference. Here's our moderator, Lawrence Bivak.
Resuming our interview on Meet the Press, our guest today is Johnny Ingersoll, the director of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. You've just met Carl Stern of NBC News. The other questioners on our panel today are Richard D. Lyons of the New York Times, William Raspberry of the Washington Post, and James J. Kilpatrick of the Washington Star Syndicate. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Lyons.
Mr. Ingersoll, in your last response, you indicated there's a difference in your mind between marijuana and addicting narcotics. Would you favor the legalization of marijuana?
No, I wouldn't. The fact that a drug is addictive or not addicting is not really the question as to its hazardness. LSD, for example, is not an addictive drug, but it is an extremely hazardous drug. Now, the problem with marijuana at this time is that there has been precious little research, although there is a mounting research program being carried out in the country, and some of this research is beginning to reveal that marijuana is not the benign kind of substance that earlier research seemed to suggest.
Yet, there have been many commissions and agencies and committees who, in the last few years, have indicated they think this would be a good idea. For example, in Canada, the Ledain Commission came out a few months ago and all but favored the legalization of marijuana next year. And Governor Halton of Virginia appointed a commission recently, which included a lot of young people, and they said they'd favor the legalization of marijuana. If you didn't have this problem on your hands, if you only had to go against hard drugs and hallucinogens, wouldn't this ease the problem of your bureau considerably?
No, as a matter of fact, only about 7% of our investigative time is spent on marijuana cases because the Supreme Court in recent rulings has virtually wiped out the federal marijuana law except for selling and smuggling. So well over 70% of our investigative time is devoted to hard drug investigations.
Yet aren't most of the arrests made these days by local law enforcement agencies concerning drugs, aren't they made for marijuana?
Yes, that's true at the local level because most of the marijuana distribution is by small dealers who are relatively amateurish, and it's basically a local problem. And we're concerned with the larger interstate aspects of the problem. The Bureau of Customs also spends a good deal of time in controlling the smuggling of marijuana.
But, sir, here again, as with reforms in society that are taking place these days, such as a reform of abortion laws and off-track betting. Once the police do not have to deal with these problems, they can concentrate on things that are of more benefit to society. If you didn't have marijuana to contend with legally, don't you think that would free the police to do their jobs with very serious crime more adequately?
Well, I think, Mr. Lyons, that could be said about things like petty theft. Petty theft is relatively less hazardous to society than armed robbery. But nevertheless, the police have to deal with both kinds of offenses. And in this case, we have to deal with the transactions in marijuana as well as the transactions in heroin and so on, because these are both violations of the law. And I favor the legally controlled mechanism, not the present one in all of its details, but I certainly favor the kind of mechanism that we have to control it, or at least that we're proposing to the Congress to control marijuana.
May I interrupt here? You say that you're carrying on a great many investigations of what marijuana does. Do you have any indication at all that it's a dangerous drug? Why do you bother so much about it unless you know that it is a dangerous drug? Is it a dangerous drug?
In its purest form, the active ingredients of marijuana, tetrahydrocannabinols, if you'll let me, are extremely dangerous. They're as psychoactive as LSD or the other hallucinogens. The degree of purity of marijuana varies from one product to another, depending upon where it's grown, the climatic conditions, and so on. And there is some marijuana that grows wild in the United States. It's relatively harmless. But that compared to the consumption of hashish, which is a very concentrated form of marijuana, is like comparing a very mild wine to a 100-proof liquor. There's a great variation and a great gradation in the degree of hazard that marijuana can provide.
Mr. Raspberry.
And yet that gradation isn't possible under any kind of government standards, because of its not being legitimate to begin with. It seems to me that wouldn't this be an added reason why, for an added argument for legalizing marijuana, as the young people already have done, as a matter of fact?
Well, I think that it would be very difficult to, number one, control the potency of a product that's being marketed commercially, if this is what you have reference to. People just have a tendency to want to get more and more potency out of drugs or whatever they're taking. And I'm sure that the promotion of this kind of a substance would be such that it would, in due time, would produce or make available to youngsters or anybody else very potent forms of cannabis. I think that we really have to know a great deal more about marijuana and about its long-term as well as its short-term effects. There have been indications that it affects perception, it affects judgment. We know that it impairs motor ability. We know that under actual driving conditions, a person who has recently consumed marijuana has a very difficult time in controlling his automobile. He has a difficult time in concentrating on what he's doing, and all
sounds
of these
almost as bad as alcohol.
Well, and this is another reason why I don't think we ought to add another product to the problems we have with alcohol. It would seem to me that it would be much better if we spent our time and our energy in trying to resolve our problems with alcohol rather than adding another one to it.
If a lot of people think the law enforcement agencies are spending too much time on marijuana instead of concentrating more effort on heroin and the harder drugs, probably more people than that think that you're spending too much time of going after, cracking down on users, the victims of heroin, and too little going after the major sources of heroin. How do you respond to that?
Well, my own philosophy is that we should make a distinction between the users or the victims and the traffickers. Our agency concentrates on traffickers. Some of these may happen to be users also, but we're concerned with the highest level of trafficking that we can get to. We do not. It is not a violation of federal law to be an addict, for example, and those addicts who come in to federal custody usually come in through another route because of other crimes they've committed or because they commit themselves or are committed for treatment.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
What steps are being taken, Mr. Ingersoll, to cut off your sources of supply in Turkey and in France?
In Turkey, the number of provinces and the number of farmers who are permitted to grow opium legally has been reduced dramatically. The number of provinces have been reduced from 21 to 7 in the last 2 or 3 years, and they've been centralized into the interior of the country to prevent smuggling or to inhibit smuggling. In France, we have been working very closely for about the last year, and the government of France has increased its activities many fold in those areas which are used by the criminal organizations for processing and transporting the raw materials and the finished heroin.
Mr. Ingersoll, here in this country, the problem is largely a problem among young people, is it not?
Well, it certainly is, and it's this is the trend. The in 1960, for example, in California, the average drug arrest, the median age was 25. In 1969, it was down to 19. So I think this.
A recent magazine survey has indicated that 47% of the students polled are either occasional or frequent users of marijuana. Would your own observations confirm that figure?
Yes, we haven't done a nationwide comprehensive study, but we have surveyed a number of colleges and high schools in various areas of the country, and that figure certainly exists in some of the schools. It's much lower in others.
Well, then let me follow up Mr. Stern's question a while ago. Why, if half of your college students are criminals in this way, why don't you use undercover agents on the campuses?
Because the use and distribution of marijuana or drugs on a campus are what we regard as a local offense, and we look to local and state agencies to enforce those laws. We will assist them on request, but we rarely go onto campus with undercover agents, and it's only under very unusual and exceptional circumstances that we do.
Mr. Ingersoll, several months ago, Dr. Donald Luria, president of the New York State Council on Drug Addiction, said that within a couple of years, every high school and every college in the country will be inundated with heroin. Do you consider the heroin situation, heroin, which is a very dangerous drug, do you consider the situation that bad in our schools?
I think it's that bad in some of our metropolitan areas. It's claimed that that situation already exists in New York. However, I think it would take a considerable amount of time for it to reach 100% of our schools throughout the country.
Mr. Stern.
A doctor who was at this month's Powder Ridge Festival told of treating 985 bad trips, 150 kids freaked out of their minds simultaneously, acid laced with strychnine. The kids were even using animal drugs for chasers. To what extent is adulterated drugs and experimentation with these chemicals now outdistancing as a problem, even the use of hard drugs?
Well, one of the great problems and one of the characteristics of the drug abuse phenomenon in the last 10 years has been the increased variety of drugs available. 10 or 15 years ago, the drugs of choice were heroin, marijuana, those drugs that came from vegetable sources. But our technology has increased the variety of drugs, the synthetic hallucinogens, for example. The stimulants are all synthetics. That this is a very significant problem today, and kids will experiment and jump from one drug to another. Of those that we know about, well over half do use more than one drug. This is a change in the pattern from 15 or 20 years ago.
Mr. Lyons.
Mr. Ingersoll, is there any indication that the amount of hard drugs being smuggled into the United States and reaching illicit channels is in fact diminishing? It's been said in New York City that the junkie gets more for his money these days, i.e., he's getting more heroin than he was a year ago for what he pays for it. The Bureau of Customs, Border Patrol have all added larger number of people to try to control the traffic, yet there doesn't seem to be any decrease. Why?
Well, I think that if we try to control the traffic at the border, we're in a counterproductive kind of situation. What we're doing now is aiming our efforts at the source. that being the source countries, countries where it's produced, where it's not controlled adequately, or countries which are being used for transshipment or for refining purposes. I feel that this is the only way that we're going to cut off the supply. But even cutting off the supply will be futile unless, on the other hand, we can reduce the demand or eliminate the demand. Now, the case that we completed a few weeks ago that was dubbed Operation Eagle has indicated that we were able to reduce in some areas of the country substantially the amount of cocaine available, because this was the organization that was dealing in the majority of cocaine in this country. And the next thing that we have to do now is go to those, is drive at the laboratories in other countries which are refining cocaine, because it will still be coming in until we get these countries to assist us in eliminating those laboratories.
Yet the point is, sir, that heroin is the major problem in the country as far as drugs, hard drugs are concerned. Has the amount of heroin in this country been reduced in any recent time frame?
Not to date, no.
Mr. Asbury.
This is what we're working on.
Yes, you've been saying for at least a year and a half that you knew most of the major drug traffickers in the Washington area, and yet there's been no lessening of drug traffic even in this local area. How do you account for that? If you know where the sources are, and you know who's doing it, who's selling it, why haven't you done something about it?
Mr. Asbury, we have done something about it. We have arrested and referred for prosecution over 100 drug traffickers, major drug traffickers in the Washington, D.C. area. They are just beginning the trials of these now, most of whom were arrested over a year ago. It's largely due to the perennial problem of court delays. They are arrested, they're charged, indicted, and released on bond, and you know what they're going to do. They're going right back to their old ways, and they're peddling drugs. Now, the dilemma that we're facing is whether we should develop more cases against them, and in some cases we are, or whether we should direct our efforts at other people who are also involved in the traffic. But until we are able to get speedy trials and get these matters settled quickly in the Washington area, this is the kind of a problem that we're going to be facing.
Then there's reason to be hopeful, I take it. This 100 or so major traffickers that you mentioned will undoubtedly be coming to trial within the next several months or a year at least. After that, can we expect a major decrease in the amount of heroin in the city?
Assuming that there aren't others taking their places. But there, again, I say that We cannot rely only on arresting local or even national distributors, because for every one that you arrest, there are a number of others standing in the wings ready to partake of the money and the funds that can be earned from doing this.
Gentlemen, we have less than 4 minutes. Mr. Kilpatrick.
Mr. Ingersoll, under the terms of the tough bill reported out of the House Commerce Committee on Friday, your agency would receive funds to hire an additional 300 agents. What would you do with those agents if they're granted you?
Well, we have increased our agency substantially in the last 2 years. We did not ask for this provision in this bill, because I'm hopeful that we can grow at a pre-planned rate.
This is more than you want.
That's right. And I prefer to go through the normal appropriations route in order to obtain our resources.
The bill has been criticized in some quarters as having too much emphasis on law enforcement and not nearly enough on prevention or education. What is your response to that criticism?
Well, I think that if that's going to be a criticism, it's valid. However, this law was never purported to be anything but a law enforcement measure. And the government recognizes fully the need for rehabilitation, improvement, and the need for research and educational programs, but it also feels that there is adequate legislation to deal with these programs, and funds have been made available in greater quantities in recent years. For the last 3 years, the government has spent more on rehabilitation and treatment programs than it has on law enforcement, and it has increased 6 times the amount of money that's available for education and drug abuse prevention programs.
Mr. Ingersoll, as I understand it, you're now getting for fiscal 1970 about $27 million. In view of the vast size of this problem, do you think the federal government is spending enough money in this area?
Mr. Spivak, we're trying to catch up for past inadequacies. During the between 1960 and 1968, the government expanded its law enforcement arm in narcotic and drug control at the rate of 1% per year during a period of time when the problem was growing at least 100% per year and maybe more. Now, in the last 2 years, we have increased our budget just in my bureau from $18 million during the first fiscal year 69 to an expected $34.5 million during fiscal 71. Now, we're growing just as quickly as we can, but half of our agents have less than 3 years of experience with our organization.
Well, are you saying that you don't need more money?
Oh, I need more money, but I want to be able to use it effectively. I just don't want to have a lot more money and not be able to use it.
How much more money do you think you could use for your bureau?
Oh, I think that in the next 2 or 3 years that we will probably peak out in the neighborhood of $100 million.
Mr. Stern.
Have you tried marijuana?
No, sir, I don't use marijuana.
One congressional committee which investigated the alleged My Lai massacre suggested the GIs were so crazed with marijuana that they didn't know what they were doing. Is marijuana so mind-distorting that a person cannot be held liable for what he does under its influence?
There have been some cases where this has occurred. And again, this is a part of the problem. It's unpredictable in how it will react in an individual in a given situation.
Some states, such as Ohio, have taken the tough approach. They sentence drug peddlers, to life in prison. Has that helped any?
Well, I think that that may be the only answer for some drug peddlers who are involved in this for profit. I think if we can't correct them or change their way, then they have to be kept away from society for the protection of society.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Ingersoll, for being with us today on Meet the Press. We'll be back with you in just a minute after this message.
It's true. Some people are forever young, forever fun. Red Skelton, certainly. Red skedaddles to NBC Monday nights this fall, just before Stanley and Livingston. Heckle and Jekyll? All right. Rowan and Martin and company. They're holding a laugh in, but they'll break for a Monday movie. Like Boom. Lady L. And the producers, to mention just a few of the new Monday movies. That's Red. Laugh in. Monday night at the movies. That could happen only on Monday of NBC Week. Don't let it happen without you.